Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Blaze Your Own Trail podcast. My name is Jordan Mendoza. I'm your host, and I've got a very special guest today. His name is Eric Allen, and I'm going to have him tell you a little bit about who he is and what he does today.
Awesome. Jordan, thank you so much for having me on your show, man. Truly an honor to be here. Yeah, dude, Eric Allen's my name. I do content creation, voiceover work, podcast videos, or I host two podcasts, the Eric Allen Show, Top Rated May Show, and work with brands on company products like unboxing, how-to explainer videos, and do some fun laser graving on the side. But I just love connecting with people, and podcasting is such a passion of mine. And so my big thing is just love to be able to put out information that hopefully makes an impact on folks.
I love it. I love it. And that's, I think, what has made us resonate with each other. We both are, you know, our goal is to create a positive impact out yeah. in the world. And so I'd love to kind of learn about, you know, Eric as a kid. And that's, you know, the favorite part of my show is we get a chance to really rewind, you know, totally. and take this journey backwards. So if you can give the audience context, you know, where were you born and raised? And if we can share, you know, adolescent years, elementary, middle through high school. And then, you know, what kind of kid were you back then? Were you more into academics? Were you into sports? And, you know, just give us some of the dynamics back then.
Yeah, totally. So I grew up in what I thought was a normal household, Eastern Washington, a place called Tri-Cities, or Kennewick, Washington was part of those Tri-Cities there. And, you know, went to Sunday school, played Little League. My dad would take my best friend, Dave, and I literally throw us in dumpsters behind big stores every Saturday morning and say, go find treasure. Like that was a fun thing for us to go do, you know? And then my parents got divorced when I was 11 years old. I'd never heard anybody say that word before. I didn't know anybody that had gotten divorced. It was like a shocker to my system. My mom ends up getting together with a guy who was very physically abusive almost immediately. And I didn't understand why she stayed with him. It was strange to me to see that because my dad was definitely not that way. And I remember, you know, moments where I'd be looking out through there. I would be on the outside looking into their bedroom window and he'd be hitting her with a cordless phone. You know, I was always calling the police. Police would show up. My mom would never press charges and nothing would ever change. Well, then they did the smart thing. They got pregnant. And they decided to move myself, my sister, who's 4 years younger than me, and then my soon-to-be younger brother, who's about, he was about probably 3 months at the old, 3 months old at the time, move us to Stephensville, Montana, population 1,200. Beautiful property, man. 5 acres, ponds, trees. I mean, up in the mountains, beautiful. Really far away from police stations. So we get up there and they rent this house. It's got 3 bedrooms. It's got one for them, one for my little brother, who's, again, just a few months old, and then one for my sister, who's 4 years younger than me. And they're like, hey, dude, you get to live in the garage. So I literally had this like bed on one half of the garage. And I had a plastic tarp at the end of my bed that separated the truck that pulled in. And so I had a fireplace in my half of the garage that would keep me semi-warm during those winters of negative degree weather in Montana. So it's kind of crazy.
It's not warm there.
Right. True. All. Yeah. So, you know, negative degrees up there a lot of times. And, but the abuse continued, you know, so I'm up there, I'm brushing my teeth one night. They came home arguing, wasn't anything different than any other night. But as I was brushing my teeth, I felt in my heart that it was God saying, dude, you got to turn around. This is getting really bad. And so as I turned around, the house, the way that was set up was behind me was the kitchen to the pantry, to the garage where I stayed. And in that pantry spot, my mom's boyfriend is on top of her one after the other, just boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, dude, I got to get this guy off. So I walked up and I grabbed a cast iron pan and I swung as hard as I could and I split the back of his head open. And he turned around and he said, what then? As he said that, I took a swing and split his forehead open. And he was bleeding really good down his face and it still didn't knock him out. I had fallen over the second time I threw that pan and he was yelling and my mom jumps up, lands like 6 punches in a row, blood spots on the wall. Cops show up, take him to jail for the night. My mom doesn't press charges. And I actually got kicked out of the house. I had 3 months left in my freshman year of high school.
Man.
So I ended up staying on my buddy Forrest, man, hardwood floors, slept on those hardwood floors the last 3 months of my freshman year, and then moved back to live with my dad in Washington for my sophomore through senior year. But that incident set me on a path of destruction for the next 10 years of my life. Basically no accountability once I moved in with my dad, did a lot of drugs. 18 years old, I got arrested for having a bong. And then I was kicked out of my house 2 weeks after I graduated. And then from there, between ages of 18 and 21, I moved 21 times, living on floors here, 2 weeks there, 3 days there. Lit off of credit cards and then moved to Seattle. And by the time I'm 21, I was $28,000 in debt and filed bankruptcy. And that's kind of what led me down to the path that I was on now, man.
Yeah, man. Well, I appreciate you sharing that context. And there's definitely a lot to unpackage, you know, and I can relate, you know, to your story. I, you know, grew up with my mom and my stepdad, and my stepdad was, you know, severe alcoholic, especially in the early 80s, early 90s, and would get hammered and, with getting arguments. And I remember him one time throwing a beer can across the room and it hit my mom and, like, you know, split her head open. And, you know, I remember having a very pivotal moment. You know, I didn't take a pan or anything like that. I didn't, you know, there was no violence, but I remember, you know, we were in the parking lot of a grocery store and he had like reached, she had oxygen cause she only had one lung. And so he actually reached the oxygen thing, was going like he was going to like choke her or do something like that. And I was in the back seat. I was probably 9 years old and I grabbed him by the neck and just kind of had him in this lock, this headlock. And I was like, if you ever lay your hands on my mom again, I will kill you. You know, I mean, I was very serious and
sure,
you know, probably 80, 70 pounds of nothing, but he could probably hear it in my voice. And I can't remember a time when he laid a hand on her again. He definitely didn't threaten me. And so I think it was one of those, you know, intuition moments like you had where it was like, you know, I've got to do something at this point. And, you know, it's tough when you're a kid, you know, and you've got to make these big boy decisions, you know, these tough, tough choices. And, you know, kudos to you for stepping up in that situation. And thank goodness that you're still here, because it could have went a million other ways, you know. But I think that, you know, you did the right thing protecting and looking out for your mom's best interests, you know. So kudos, you know, to you for that. And, you know, dealing with divorce, you know, can't be an easy thing, you know. And so, you know, you move back with your dad and start getting into riffraff, and that sounds like it sets you on a darker path that I would want to start hearing context on how you climbed out, man. Like, you know, because I'm sure there was a pivotal moment. So I'd love for you to share, you know, you're sitting at 21 years old, $28,000 in debt.
Yeah.
You know, what was it? Where was the breakthrough?
Yeah, the breakthrough for me was really, I ended up landing this job with Universal Records, which was a dream job of mine. I don't know how to play anything, but I ended up getting on with Universal Records as their mailroom guy, and did just showed up every day for 6 months. They just finally, after 6 months, like, dude, we'll just start paying you. So I was tracking sales and stuff like that. So the problem was I had a year at Universal, and the year before that, my buddy was a manager at a venue. So I had 2 year span where I probably went to 175 concerts and open tab at every single one. So I was living the rock star lifestyle without being that rock star. My 1 year anniversary at Universal, my boss calls me into his office and lays me off along with half the office. This is during the Napster days. And Napster just killed the music industry. So I sink more into this depression. I'm drinking myself to sleep every night, working at Starbucks. So I get off work, go get my six pack of beer, go to Hollywood Video and those around, you know, grab my, you know, six pack and drink myself to sleep. And one night this girl walked into Starbucks and said, hey, we've got this cool college age event down at our church. Would you be interested in going? And I didn't have any friends. I was depressed. I was alone. I was like, yeah, what time do I need to be there? So I get down there. I end up knowing all these guys from like 5-6 years prior. I'm like, dude, I haven't seen you in 5-6 years. What are you doing? And I think in that moment, God was planting a seed, because about a month later is Easter 2004, managing a band. We went out and played a concert the night before Easter. And I woke up Easter morning in my buddy's basement, surrounded by probably 15 guys. And about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I woke up and I felt God go, dude, you're going down this path that's going to end your life real quick, man, if you don't start making some changes. And so in that moment, I gave my life to Christ. I quit cold turkey, drugs, drinking, cigarettes, everything in that moment. And I called that girl up and I said, hey, thanks for inviting that church event. I got her voicemail. Maybe I'll see you at the store sometime. And a month later, we were dating, and now we've been married for almost 17 years.
Wow. That's awesome, man. That's a big shift, right? You know, you're used to living a certain way. You know, you're used to being, having a certain mindset, you know, and to go all in and do it cold turkey and stop everything. You know, that couldn't have been easy, you know, but it sounds like you had a clear message and you were taking action on that, you know, responding to that. So you meet your girlfriend who is now you're married. So, you know, what was that relationship like in the beginning? It sounds like she's had a very positive influence on your life.
Yeah, for sure, man. And, you know, I think to quit cold turkey, it definitely wasn't easy. I had to get myself uncomfortable. So I had to go put myself in situations where I would get to know guys that were living the life that I wanted to live. So I once I stopped drinking, made that decision, I found guys that were going to church that had great marriages, great businesses. They were great entrepreneurs. They were great with their money. And I started taking them out to coffee and almost interviewing them, but asking their story, like, how did you get to this? How did you do that? Right. And that helped me kind of get those drugs and cigarettes and alcohol off my mind, because I was hanging around guys that weren't doing that. Right. And so that was the big thing. I had to do that shift. I had to pivot away from all of that. And my wife, huge influence, you know, but she came from a broken home too. So when we were first married, it was like, we know exactly what we don't want in marriage, but we also brought some junk in. you know, I came in being kind of defensive and, you know, I was always blamed for stuff. So I kind of went through that stage and I had to go through counseling to kind of figure out like, why the heck am I angry? You know, like all the stuff. And we took the first 5 years just to be us, man. We traveled, we went down to Mexico twice to build homes for people. You know, we just did a lot of like volunteer work and we just got to know each other, man. And then when we had kids, and that's, you know, my kids are 11 and 8 now. So, but it was just cool, man. Just the first 5 years, just us. And we had to work through some junk, like I said, but we said, I do. And we meant it. And so our kids know that we'll never get a divorce. They see us argue. They see us disagree on things, but they see us make up, man. They see us slow dance in the kitchen. They see us kissing in the kitchen. And they're like, ooh, gross. But you know, my wife and I, when we said, I do, we mean it. We're breaking those chains of abuse, addiction, and rejection and divorce that have come for many family tree down, you know, family lines down.
Yeah, man, that's powerful. And you know, I love that of what you said. You know, you wanted to, you know, learn about each other, get to know each other. So you invested that time. I think that's super important to be able to, for one, recognize that that's what you wanted to do, but and then go and do it. So what would you say, was there kind of a roadmap after that time elapsed? Was there something that you guys did, your like relationship wise? You know, you definitely, it sounds like, got to know each other a lot better, got to experience life, got to travel, and then you started having your kids. So when they came around, what was that shift like, you know, for the family? You know, it's because as a father of five, I know that adding one, right, especially your first, there's a lot of lot of unknowns, man. There's no freaking there's no manuals out there. There's nothing, you know.
Yeah.
So what was that like being new parents, you know, and tell the audience a little bit about their 2, 11, and 8-year-olds.
Oh man, it was scary, dude. Like I said, there's no instructional book on how to be a dad or any of that stuff, man. And the first drive home from the hospital was the scariest with my daughter. I literally almost got in 2 accidents on the way home, and I lived 3 miles from the hospital. It was like the most intense drive ever. I was like 10 and 2 the whole time, you know. But yeah, dude, I mean, just being a dad is so awesome. And my kids, you know, they're great. Like we've taught them to kind of live life without technology. So it's not like they're not allowed to have iPads. They don't have technology in front of them. We watch movies on the weekends. But more than anything, we just tell them to love people where they're at, man. Like love on people, find that kid in school that's sitting by himself and go love on them. Like if we see someone in uniform, military, EMT, police, like they see us, we actually go up and say, man, thank you for your service. Thank you for what you do. And so our kids, they just love to give back. They have this heart of just to serve people. You know, my daughter wants to be a worship singer when she's older. And my son, he plays baseball and sports, and they both do jujitsu, man. And they just love life, man. And they're just, I love their heart towards people. They're not materialistic. They don't, you know, try to get stuff done or try to do the new trendy thing. They're just all about heart, man. And so I love to see them grow in that area. And they both gave their life to Christ when they were 4 years old. And I get that's young for some people, but like they just love the Lord, man. And they love to worship and they love to go to church and connect with other kids at the church, man.
That's awesome. You know, and a great positive environment for them to be in, you know, and our kids are involved in youth and, you know, go to the camps and are serving and things like that. And there's nothing more impactful that you can do is to do something for somebody else, you know,
totally.
And to, you know, bring positivity to somebody, especially, you know, like there's tons of negative stuff out there, man. Like you can turn on the news or, you know, look on Twitter, look anywhere. And if you want to find something bad, you can find it. And so the more people that we can have out there spreading a positive message and looking to actually help people, you know, the better, you know, because we're definitely at a deficit.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think, like I said, our kids, they're great. They see me wake up at 4 a.m. 6 days a week, and they think my full-time job is Top Rated May and Eric Allen Show, which is funny. But you know, they know that I do Perfection now, but it's you know, just funny that they just thought that what I do when I get up, because they see me on a daily routine, they see my routines that every single day. They're like, hey, Dad's getting up at 4 a.m you know, don't go to the office because he's on calls or doing podcasts and stuff like that. So you know, they try to example those morning routines with me and my wife, you know, like, hey, when I get up, I know I need to do some homework. I need to do this. And so it's fun to see them grow in that area, man.
That's awesome. So one thing that you said earlier that caught my eye is you've been remote since 2015.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people still navigating this thing. Like they don't know how to be remote. You know, they are, you know, fumbling around. So what's some advice you would give to somebody that maybe their company just initiated that, hey, everyone's remote now, or maybe they have kind of a flex schedule where they've got to go in, you know, 2 days and the rest of their remote, you know, what's some advice or tips that maybe helped you on the journey? You've been doing it now for 6 years, which almost 7 years now, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But for these people that are maybe having a tough time dealing with this change, what type of advice would you give them?
I think it's blocking out distractions, right? So, you know, for me, I start work around 8, but you know, if you can turn off Facebook and social media and all that stuff and just focus on work, but also take breaks, man. Don't sit there and go 4 hours straight through because your brain's going to get fried. You know, being at home, you're not around talking with people. Now I do a lot of Zoom meetings. So I'm constantly on calls with coworkers, probably 2-3 calls a day with my coworker. So I at least have that little bit of interaction. But if you're just getting into working remote, it can get lonely. At first it's like, yes, right. But there's so much stuff that you can easily get distracted with when you're home. I go downstairs to get snack way too many times, right? Like I had to train myself to not go down and eat whenever I was hungry because I started to see that weight fluctuate up a little bit working from home because it's just accessible, right? So I think if you're new to work remote, set those time blocks, man. Like, hey, work for 2 hours, take a 15-minute break, get up, walk away from your desk, go out for a walk, you know, stuff like that. That'll help you get back and be more productive with your work from home job.
I love it, man. I love it. And I think that's really great advice for everybody. Make sure you jot those down, especially if your company just switched. I know there's a lot of people out there whose companies just switched to full time, or maybe they have, you know, joined the great resignation and they decide to leave and do their own thing. And now you're at home. Well, guess what? You don't have the coworkers to talk to, right? You don't have all the normal things that you were used to. So I think those tips are super helpful, Eric. So I'd love to talk about your two shows. I know you've got, you know, the Eric Allen Show, and then you've got Top Ranked MMA. Is it Top Ranked MMA? Is that the second one?
Top Rated MMA.
So yep. Top Rated MMA, Eric Allen Show. You've got two shows collectively, you know, north of almost 350, I think you said, combined episodes. So what would you say? I would love for you to answer this question. When you look back to episode one and you look at the last episode that you just did, three biggest differences.
Man, I think confidence. The more that you do it, you know, very much like in sales, right? The more that you do it, the more comfortable you're going to get talking and speaking. And so I say, like, the big difference for me is I'm more confident on camera. Also, my first 100 episodes that I did, I was in a walk-in closet with bad lighting, bad camera, bad microphone, didn't even know what I was doing. And so now I actually have lighting. I have an office. I have cameras and stuff like that. So, you know, I love that side of it. But I also think that my criteria, or not criteria, but just the level of knowledge from the guests that I pull into my shows now is 10 times different. And not that I had bad guests before, I just changed it up a little bit because I wanted to bring more knowledge. I wanted to bring a bigger impact to the listeners of my show. I had no idea what Apple Podcast was until after I had already released 100 episodes. I was literally just recording on video and uploading to YouTube and uploading to Facebook. And then someone's like, how can I listen to your show on Apple? And I was like, what the heck is that? Right. So then I was like, oh my gosh, like I knew nothing when it came to podcasting. And so now what I've been able to do is just like go through, and now I'm set up on all those things, but it's taken me 4 years and I'm still learning and still growing. We just hit 10,000 downloads in June of this year, which was a great accomplishment. And I've been ranked on the Apple Podcast, you know, in the US and the UK a couple of times with my shows. And so it's been fun, man.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, and it's great to kind of look back and think about the closet days, right? And, you know, the equipment that you don't have. You know, I remember recording on like a headset, and looking behind me, I had like 6 tiles behind me. You know, like, so it's fun to kind of see how you've, you know, evolved and elevated. So when you think about both shows, and I know they're both, you know, different topics, one's, you know, related more about growth and entrepreneurship and that that style of interview, and the other one's around mixed martial arts. So if you could pick maybe favorite interview from each of your shows and why, whether it was the guest or whether it was just the content or a moment, you know, would you be able to share that with us?
Totally. Ken Shamrock, by far a best interview I've had on Top Rated MMA. I've spoke to him twice. The guy is just like, his heart for people is awesome, but I also love his business side. I mean, he's super smart when it comes to business. He's been in the UFC, he's done the wrestling thing, you know, and now he's a boss man of, you know, bare knuckle fighting. And that guy's story is unbelievable. So by far, Ken Shamrock, one of my favorite interviews for sure from the Top Rated MMA show, and you know, blessed to have him on twice. I think my favorite interview from the Eric Allen show is Ed Mylett. And Ed Mylett blew my socks off, man. And it wasn't even like I reached out to him to set up that interview. I actually won Ed Mylett's Max Out Challenge in 2019 that he issued on Instagram. Awesome. So he said, hey, submit a 1-minute story via stories on Instagram. Like, why do you do what you do? Why do you passion about? So I submitted a story, and about a month later, him or myself in a place called Camp Agape out of California, we were the two winners. So we both got phone calls with Ed Mylett, and I was able to record that and release that as episode 12 of the Eric Allen Show. It actually, because of Ed, the Eric Allen Show started. I came across Ed in 2018. I was like, who the heck is this guy? And so then I started the Eric Allen Show, and I had Sean Whalen on before him, and then it was Ed, and then it just opened up the doors to Brad Lee and Bedros Koulian and, you know, Jim the Rookie Morris and, you know, Tim Story, Eric LeGrand, and Dan Caldwell from Tap Out. And, you know, we're going to continue to put on amazing guests. But yeah, I think those are the two. Ironically enough, on the same day that I talked to Ken Shamrock, 2 hours later, I talked to Ed Mylett. On the exact same day, my brain was like, holy crap, this is like awesome. Craziest day ever, you know?
Very cool, very cool. And so when you think about your show, what were your initial goals? Like, why did you launch each one? You know, some people I ask this question to, and it's because they wanted to learn. You know, they wanted to learn information or stories. The other ones, it's because they eventually wanted to turn it into a business or monetize it. So what was your initial thought process and strategies? And then if you can share, has any of that changed now that you're 300 plus episodes in?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, Top Rated MMA actually started as an apparel company in 2012. And then in 2015, I got bored with it. And I literally put an ad in Craigslist and said, who wants to buy this company? And one guy called me up and said, hey, I'll offer you a few grand. And it was in that call that I decided that I wasn't ready to quit. So I pivoted my mindset and started doing the podcast thing. And my initial goal was to ask fighters, why do you want to get in a cage and get punched in the face? That was the only question that I really had when going into interviews with that. And then it was just kind of free flowing. But, you know, and that's what it's evolved to. And humbly, we're considered the number one MMA podcast out here in the Northwest. I've done, you know, interviews with folks all over the world, both male and female fighters. And the Eric Allen Show, you know, the initial goal for that was sort of the same thing. I want to talk with entrepreneurs, world changers, and success-minded people. And I want to ask them, why do you want to get punched in the face? Hopefully not physically, but virtually, as entrepreneurs and world changers, we go through failure. We go through bankrupt. We fail. We lose money. We take risk and we get beat up. Why do we keep going? So that was my initial thought, like on the Eric Allen Show. I want to know, why do we keep going as entrepreneurs? Why do you keep fighting through that? And so those, and it's still the same sort of question when I bring guests on the Eric Allen Show is like, hey, I want to understand this. I want to understand your story. What things did you go through? Hopefully through the guests that are on my show, I can make an impact. And, you know, as I first started the Eric Allen Show, I was talking to people and I was like, holy crap, mind blown. Like, this is so much good stuff. Selfishly, I wanted to like hold that in. I'm like, oh no, man, I got to share this out with the world. And so that's why I started doing both of those shows. And I think it's changed a little bit in regards to just how I do my shows, a little bit more professional, a little bit more better questions. And, you know, I'm nailed down to the process of editing and everything myself. And so that's probably what has changed. But, you know, the goal is the same. I just want to make an impact on both shows.
Love it. Love it. That's definitely a great mission to have, is to, you know, make a positive impact and, yeah, and let people learn through other people's experiences. You know,
yeah,
we get the lessons without all the physical lessons or the dirt or the mud or the fire that, you know, that person had to go through, you know,
yeah,
as long as we take that information, folks, and we actually go out and apply it, you know, and try to become a practitioner of that, you know. And I think that's one of the most important things you can do in business. Before you ever tell someone how to do something, you got to definitely do it yourself and, yeah, you know, become that practitioner. So I would love to find out from you, what's a favorite book that you have, or one that you'd recommend out to the audience, whether, you know, you've read it recently or it's just one that you keep in your rotation?
There's two books. One, and I don't want to push religion on anybody, but I think the Bible is so smart when it comes to just life in general, whether you're a believer or not, but it talks about money and so much stuff to help you get structured with money. One, that's my favorite book. Number two, I love Ed Mylett's Max Out book. It's 95 pages. I've read it several times, and that book made such an impact on my life, into my daily routines and how I look at life and how I break down, you know, my daily habits. definitely Ed Milet's Max Out book is for sure number two book for me, man.
Awesome. Awesome. And you know, one thing that you shared with me off air is that for your podcast, you give everybody a gift. And yes. I would love to just, you know, give you a moment, because I know this is something that, you know, you have passion for. This is another stream of income for you and your family. So I want to kind of give you some airtime. If you have a sample, you hold it up. I would love to see what this looks like. And then, you know, tell everyone kind of the story behind that. Like, was this a goal that you were like, you know what, I want to do something special for every guest? Or did it come after the show started? I'd really love to get some context.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always interested in side hustles, right? And how I can make things better and walk away from my full-time job. And laser engraving for me came, like, I was like, I saw something online. I was like, man, that's pretty cool. I want to do that. And so it took me about a year just kind of looking stuff over. And I ended up with this small machine. It's called a laser pecker, which is a hilarious name, but it actually works really good. And it probably does 5 or 6 inch circles, or I can do, you know, squares or whatever logo I want, but it'll engrave on just about anything except for metal. So it can do wood, leather, all that fun stuff, corkboard. And about 50 or 60 shows into the Eric Allen show, that's when I got this machine. I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool if I could send a log, like kind of coaster piece with the show guest name and the episode number and the date and all that, and send that to them as a thank you. And so that's what I've been doing, man. And I get a lot of good feedback from it. About probably 6 months ago, I started doing home decor. So like, you know, funny quotes for this holiday season, things like that. And then I do like ornaments and stuff like that. So people are sending me their logo and say, hey, can you put this on an ornament size? It's like, you know, by 3 inches, and I send it to them. And yeah, man. So it helps me to be able to do that. And so I love sending those guests out gifts, but then it's fun to just cool to see all the cool logos that people send to me that they want engraved on this piece of wood.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you know, you get that creative juices out, right? You want to be creative, but you know, I mean, I think that is a problem a lot of people have, is a lot of people like want stuff, but they also want it to be personalized. So you're kind of bringing the digital world to in personalization and meshing them together, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fun, man. I love doing it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I definitely want to be able to share with the audience all the ways that they can reach out to you. So if you have, you know, a one-stop shop link for the audience, feel free to, you can share that now. And of course, when the episode drops, we're going to get everything down in the show notes as well.
Yeah, just Eric Allen Media. It's E-R-I-K-A-L-L-E-N. ericallenmedia.com is the website. And then on Instagram, it's just Eric G. Allen. Again, that's with a K. That's where my link is. I have a link tree on there so you can access all my, you know, social channels. But the website really will get you directed to my podcast, to, you know, speaking opportunities, or, you know, if you're interested in hiring me for unboxing videos or how-to videos, explainer videos, you can see all my work on there as well. And then YouTube, man, you know, I love being able to connect with people. I respond to every comment on my YouTube videos too. So, you know, the YouTube is just Eric Allen Media. And so, yeah, man, love connecting with new people.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I know that everyone that either listens or watches this is going to get a ton of value out of your story. You know, it's a story of overcoming, right? You know, everybody in life is going to deal with adversity. We don't know when it's going to happen. Some of it could be when you're younger. There's plenty of people that are, you know, 40 that haven't even faced it yet, that might face it in the next decade or so of their life. But it's not, you know, what happens to you, but it's how you overcome it. You are someone that is setting a great example for your family and your kids, and showing them that, you know, hey, listen, you know, I reacted one way to this, it didn't work out, right? Now I'm going the other way, and I'm seeing the positivity, and it sounds like it's added tremendous value to your life. So kudos to you, man, for taking action, you know, because whenever we take action, it's going to create momentum. That's going to turn into consistency and form those habits, and eventually we'll get to results. It doesn't happen overnight, folks, but
yeah,
you know, kudos to you for putting in the work.
Thank you so much, man. Truly an honor to be here, man. Really appreciate you having me on. And you know, I love your show, man. People need to be listening to the show for sure.
I appreciate it, bro. Keep blazing your old trail, my friend.